Hello everyone and welcome back to not only another day here at the Damage Report, but Friday, garbage day. And we decided we want a theme of garbage. So we brought back a classic Friday go. So needlessly mean, Brett. It's been a while.
You know what, John? That's it.
No! We had him briefly.
Then I dropped it behind the desk, but it's your lens cap because I use your camera. So
that's true. Jokes on. Almost lost you, but your incompetence means you now have to do the show. So Brett, you've been gone for a really long time. We've had some great fill-ins. Obviously, people still miss you greatly. What has it been like being free of the shackles of Friday TDR?
You do not need to say that you had some great fill-ins in that whole thing.
But they were great. You're great and they were great.
Yeah, but I am the desperate co-host sitting here just needing positive reinforcement and attention. And they're not here. They're not watching whoever it is. I don't know. I didn't catch those episodes because I was actually doing this thing called work, John.
I wasn't. It's weird because you were working so hard and yet you come back looking refreshed. Your hair is more lustrous. You have a twinkle to your eye. But we're very glad to have you back, everyone.
I was editing till like 11:15 last night.
And I also here played some Fortnite. So
that's beside the point, John.
Nuance the work thing there. Anyway, from the chat, I can see that everyone's very excited to have you back. I'm excited too. Hopefully it will last. We'll see. I know you've got this big new young show that's super exciting, but don't forget about us, okay? Don't forget about us.
When it comes to my relationship with multiple shows on this network, it is the closest word is polyamorous. In that emotionally it's attacks on me and it's a lot of juggling and lying to each other, but it really is. It really is working out for me. It's beneficial to me as long as I can play all the shows against each other.
And you are very successfully doing that. But anyway, while we're excited to have you back, that's not the only reason we're excited. And you probably think I'm alluding to the rundown. That's also good. The rundown will be fine or whatever. But that's not what I'm talking about either. I want to talk about something exciting that we teased yesterday. Today is an important anniversary. 1 year ago today, maybe, the Dragon Squad was first birthed. Completely casually and not intentionally, we came up with this title, mostly to mock people like the Proud Boys and other groups where, man, they're really trying to sound alpha and they just can't quite make it happen. And we came up with Dragon Squad. And ever since then, it has become a phenomenon. There are thousands of you out there that have taken up dragon names of your own. They are all over the chats, even on other streams. I randomly come across dragons in other YouTube comment sections and other Twitch streams, which is always awesome. And you guys have just been so supportive. That it's awesome. Thank you for that. And we want to give you a little back on this day of our anniversary. We've got a special promotion for you. So recently on Shop2IT, you've probably seen that we have our bomber jacket. And the cool thing about the bomber jacket is that it's customizable. You can get these different patches and you can put them on and stuff like that. And I believe we have some patches here. Yes, have some cool patches. You can show like issues that you care about. If you go to Shop2IT today and you get the bomber jacket and you add a Dragon Squad shirt to your shopping cart, free. Free Dragon Squad shirt, how awesome is that? Obviously, we got a lot of great ones. We got the green one, which I absolutely love. We have the recently launched rainbow one, but also, partially for fun, and I think partially to make me uncomfortable, we've got some awesome new designs in Shop2IT right now that I want to show you. So let's see, we've got the Dragon Squad ice cream shirt. So this was designed by a fan of TDR, Tall and Awkward 3. So thank you for that. This shirt commemorates the epic struggle that I engaged in for a couple of years to track down and consume Cinnamon Buns Ben and Jerry's ice cream. So thank you for that, Tall and Awkward. Tall and Awkward also designed this, kind of like the Terminator thing, but with me becoming a dragon. It's a little bit horrific, it's a little bit awesome. So those are available. And then obviously there's Damage Report shirts, there's Dragon Squad shirts. I get awesome pictures sent to me of people modeling their great stuff. So that's always awesome. And it's now available. Just go to Shop2IT, put the bomber jacket in there. You add a shirt, and you get the shirt for free. So how awesome is that? By the way, so that's the gift for you. But much more importantly, there's the gift for us here at TDR. So every member of TDR got an awesome little gift bag combining a few different things. So a few very special things, shirt, tote bag, stuff like that. But then Mini Morpho, who many of you are in the audience are familiar with, this great artist, created this limited run of awesome dragon art coasters commemorating Brett and JR and Anna and myself. So that's awesome. It went out to the different members of the team. I think Brett's holding one right there, actually. But it's not just for us. That does look cool. Three of you out in the audience are also getting a set of these. So if you want to find out if you want.
Going right past it, just right past all the visual humor that I've put together. Okay, like a dragon roll. Act now and you'll also get a dragon roll. You'll get some dragon fruit, which I forgot to bring to the set.
I realized that was what that was.
It's eel.
Why are you eating a dragon roll at 10?
While most places will give you a dragon roll with eel, only at TYT will give you dragon rolls made from real dragons who made the ultimate sacrifice.
They're endangered, but they're so good. I can't believe you got a dragon roll. And you, when did you put on the dragon costume? I didn't even see you doing that. That's a cool dragon. I like that.
It's so easy to like slide things by you.
Someone says, where did you get that at this ungodly Pacific hour? Well, I could actually go for one. But anyway, thank you, Brett. There's the dragon fruit. Everything's coming up dragon. So anyway, if you want to know if you were one of the viewers lucky enough to get a set of Mini Morphos coasters, you can go to Shop TYT right now at Shop TYT on Twitter or Instagram. It's already live. You can go see if you won. By the way, also wanted to thank, where is it? Yes, we got it.
I never had dragon fruit before, but that is delicious.
I have not either. So a woman-owned business, Dragon Baby, sent us dragon soap as well. Thank you for that. We're so lucky. There's some awesome cards were sent in by members of the audience. Thank you everybody for that.
This is amazing. I don't want to glide by because it looks like we got different dragon soaps.
I think that we did. I got this red one with a dragon embedded in it and a long curvy tail.
Oh, I got one. It's like a it's like the first, you know, level beginning of your badge on YouTube channel membership. It's a
nice.
It's a dragon. So I can't get into it, John.
Okay. Well, your hands are probably sticky with dragon fruit and sushi residue.
No, no matter what happens, I never get sticky.
Okay.
My whole life, I've been able to avoid it.
Okay.
You said it before we started not to take any extra time, so you just go ahead.
Well, anyway, thank you everybody for being a part of the community, for being part of the Dragon Squad. Mini Morpho, thank you for the art. Dragon Babies, thank you so much. Thank you to everybody on the team. Hopefully you're enjoying. That is awesome. It's bursting out of the egg. That's pretty awesome. Thank you everybody on the team who makes the show possible. Much appreciated. Reminder, shoptyt.com. You can get a free shirt with the purchase of the bomber jacket. So should be a lot of fun. Anyway, with that, you know what? I was thinking we would just do 1 year of the Dragon Squad and then we end the show or whatever, but I guess it's going pretty well. I guess we could do a little bit more. Maybe we'll do like one bonus month or something. So I guess we'll do the news today.
But sorry, John, that's all the time I have. I kind of have to go. We spent a lot of time. You kind of wasted a lot of time with your gags.
Sushi,
and
you're not going anywhere. No,
I am going to take this off because
you got that costume on. Anyway, everybody, as we go through the news that's coming up, you can send us messages and we'll respond. Tweets, super chats, comments, all of that. Also, at the end of the show, as always on Fridays, we will be choosing our garbage people of the week. At the community tab, you can go vote for the community garbage person. Brett hasn't done it for a while, so I'm really excited to see who his garbage person is going to be. But before we get to that, we got a lot of other news to get to. So, Brett. You ready to do this thing?
Sure, John. I'll focus by the time we get there.
What did you do? Did you get sushi on your lens?
Just don't worry. Just everyone calm down. Brandon, stop talking trash in everyone's ear. I focused.
And everything fell apart.
Everything's fine. Better.
Okay.
Go.
Let's do this thing. Okay. Let's get serious. We got serious news now. This morning, President Biden is going to be unveiling a suite of executive orders designed around the theme of increasing competition in a bunch of different industries. So we're going to give you details on some of what they aim to do. and then give you our thoughts about what we think is good about this and where it might be falling short. So it'll be signed at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, so not long from now. Now, in a little bit, I'm bad with time. Anyway, it's gonna be 72 different initiatives that he wants over a dozen different federal agencies to undertake to promote competition throughout the US. And it goes after corporate monopolies across a broad swath of industries, and specifically directs antitrust agencies to focus their enforcement efforts in the labor, healthcare, technology, and agriculture sectors. And you know, just in case there's some conservatives watching, I wanna snare you, I wanna hook you. So let's start off with his regulations attacking the tech industry. So includes several measures specifically targeting big tech companies like Google, Facebook, Apple, and Amazon. And so let's see, we have the order telling federal agencies that approve mergers that they should scrutinize the tech industry's practices more closely. A second provision will encourage the Federal Trade Commission to write rules limiting how the tech giants use consumer data, a response to criticism that companies like Amazon can leverage what they know about users to gain the upper hand on competing services and businesses. On top of that, you're gonna have the FCC creating new rules for broadband internet providers and encourage the FCC to readopt net neutrality rules. So we'll get more that we'll get to in just a second, but right there, hey, that's one of the only things they've cared about for the past couple of years is how these big tech companies have gotten out of hand. Josh Hawley's like writing books and selling books on Amazon about it and promoting them on Google and everything. They hate this stuff. They want to fight back against those monopolies. So let's start there, Brett. Will he get any cred from the right for these executive orders targeting out of control tech and social media company monopolies?
No, because those entities and individuals are always have been intellectually disingenuous when they are making those arguments, because they all have to do with censorship. They don't like censorship, and they're claiming that many right wing voices are being censored or throttled online. And that's just provably not the case. We used to have like this. We always do like free trials at TYT and then see if it works, and then we cancel. But we got this free trial, this software that was able to like tell you what the number one things were on Facebook at any given time. And they were always, and this is proven on a website or on a Twitter handle, I think it's like Facebook 10. The top 10 are always Ben Shapiro, Dan Bongino, The Daily Caller, The Daily Wire, and like kittens. By that logic, the only thing that's getting throttled in terms of viewership is dogs, really. So clearly, in this situation, no matter what happens, they know that the Republican mindset is in terms of a party apparatus and a messaging machine is their priority is not to be correct or accurate on anything. It's to identify arguments and messages they can repeat ad nauseum to make it feel like their people are fighting for something. Now, on the one hand, that's kind of great if you're a Republican and you want to feel like you're fighting for something. And it's frustrating for someone on the left because seldom do you have anything remotely like that. So that's really where I'm at on it. And yeah, thanks.
Okay, I appreciate that. I don't expect that there will be much about that. And look, I mean, substantively, one thing they have on their side in not wanting to give him any credit is this isn't going to break apart any of those companies. I mean, that's the largest issue, I think, with all of this, whether we're talking about tech or going broader. And there's gonna be things that we'll talk about other industries. It's like designed to maybe be a bit more stringent on merger approvals going forward, although we'll see about that. But it's not actually breaking up any of the companies. So I don't know, like, if the issue is that we need more competition in tech specifically or whatever, it's not these little like nibbles around the edge that people think are necessary or have been advocating for. They're talking about reducing some of the monopoly power of these massive industries, and that is not in any one of these 72 different initiatives. That said, let's get into some of the other aspects of this. Biden is calling on the FTC to ban or limit non-compete agreements, which keep workers from leaving their employer for positions at rival firms. That's pretty broad and cross industry. Critics argue the agreements reduce wages by taking away workers' employment options. Obviously, that's part of the intent. on prescription drugs that lowers prices by supporting programs that facilitate the import of safe and cheaper drugs from Canada. It allows customers to switch banks, helps them lower their internet bills by banning excessive early termination fees. That's a good little small one, but I like that. Restores net neutrality rules that require companies to treat all internet services equally. Let's see, directs the transportation department to issue rules that require an airline to refund baggage costs when a flight is delayed and clearly disclose cancellation fees. So, I mean, the vast majority of these are, I think, are perfectly fine. I might lump many of them under common sense. These are things that should have happened, but fundamentally, it doesn't really challenge any of these monopolies. And maybe more importantly than that, while I get that he has to do what he can through the avenues that he has open to him, and as of right now, because he's not forcing a break to the impasse over the filibuster, legislation can't go forward, so I guess he has to use his executive orders. But and while I might encourage that, it is still a set of executive orders, which mean that in theory, President Tucker Carlson or President Marjorie Greene in a couple of years could snap their fingers and all these are gone. That's just a reality. I don't know if that's 100% fair, because again, he's not going to do anything in terms of legislation since he's not forcing Manchin and Sinema and all those to change on the filibuster. But this could be reversed pretty quick, Brett.
Right, that's true. But yeah, and that's just the nature of, you know, things that fall under the purview of the executive branch, that the, you know, the general limitations on what that can do through checks and balances and the way the Constitution's laid out can be checked by legislation. But this is always the case, that things that are under the administration's executive branch can just be changed like this. And it's good that they do get changed like this. And there are certain things that you, there's, yeah, I agree. It's a lot of these are, I think if Biden wants to lean into anything, because there is no Biden. There's no Biden, right? Like, who is Joe Biden? What has he been doing? The only time we've really heard from Biden, like today, everybody's like, he told someone he doesn't trust the Taliban. Like, that's the takeaway. There is no Biden. There was no Obama for a very long time. And there is an active bully pulpit president that we've had in quite some time is Trump. Yeah. And I think if Biden just leans in a little more to these kinds of common sense, no nonsense thing, because after all, he's like Uncle Joe Biden. He just is like, why don't they give you the money back when you have a baggage problem? If you paid a fee and you don't get that, you should get that fee back, damn it. I think you should go after the credit union or the credit score agencies.
Yeah.
I think that's something
that there have been progressive pushing for that. But
and they absolutely should do it because it's all fictional. Like, and you need someone strong in the White House, even if their brand, because now presidents need a brand, is I'm mad at this and I'm gonna fix it because it's stupid.
Yeah.
And anyone who says otherwise is intentionally on the other side from you and trying to stop you from getting what you need to actually do things that affect you on a daily basis.
Yeah. But in doing that, he would have to criticize people that he is clearly not prepared to criticize, unfortunately. Yeah. So they're fine, I guess. I'm sure we'll find out that like 20 of them were written by Alec or whatever and are actually terrible. I don't have the details on that yet. We'll have more once they're actually released, but they're fine, but incredibly limited and potentially quite temporary. So that's fun. Anyway, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, very different news. We're gonna talk about, we like obviously on this program when awful people finally get their comeuppance, and that bastard Ken Klippenstein finally got his. We'll be giving you the details on that after this. Okay, everybody, we've got a very important story to move to, so why don't we launch right into this? For the past week or so, Tucker Carlson has been aggrieved about his belief that the NSA has been wiretapping him, spying on him, trying to get to the bottom of what he's up to. And he's been trying to get to the bottom of what they're up to, filing a FOIA request against the NSA. We now have the details of that FOIA request because online Uber villain Ken Klippenstein tried to get to the bottom of what he was trying to get to the bottom of. So he FOIA'd Tucker's FOIA. And Tucker didn't like that at all. So here is Tucker Carlson on his show last night talking about one Ken Klippenstein.
We haven't heard back from the NSA, probably won't for a long time. They didn't promptly respond, however, to some stooge at The Intercept, which is some joke billionaire funded website. This guy filed a FOIA request about our FOIA request and then wrote on Twitter this: I've obtained under FOIA the FOIA request Tucker Carlson sent the NSA. So what's interesting is, and it really does kind of crystallize the total degradation of American journalism. The Intercept was founded to push back against the surveillance state. It was founded by Glenn Greenwald. And now, of course, they're busy covering it up and cheering it on. You wonder, instead of FOIAing our FOIA requests, what are you going to find there? Nothing. Want to figure out what the NSA is doing, the largest intel agency in the world. That might occupy your time. That might be a virtuous thing to do. Doesn't occur.
What is his problem?
It's so good.
There's like a thousand different really weird things about that. And obviously I'm joking about Ken getting taken down a peg or two or whatever. But dude, you're a known liar. He FOIA'd it in part to know if you had actually done it, because this is going to blow your mind. We can't just take for granted that you're being honest when you say that you FOIA'd it. Like, that's level one. There's a lot of other levels. Brett, what did you think about that?
So first of all, I just want to tell everybody that right after this happened, Ken was already slated to be on Deep Dive with Jordan Ewell. And Ryan Grimm had been unavailable for it, but his flight got canceled. So Ryan Grimm was also available, also of The Intercept, NCUAT, to be on Deep Dive. So right after this happened, if you are a subscriber, a Twitch subscriber, you have access to this. You can go watch the VOD of the entire episode. It's fantastic. And we're trying to find ways to give it to everybody else as well.
Sounds good.
It's probably going to be on YouTube at some point today. A condensed version, not the extended version. But when you look through everything that Tucker Carlson said, it is absolutely BS. So first of all, to your point, what you just mentioned, like Tucker Carlson, the reason we can't trust him is because his lawyers told us not to. In a court of law, his defense against lawsuits is that he is not a journalist. And his things that he puts forward as fact on his show are not to be taken as such. So he, not my words, your words, Tucker. The other thing, the strategery of Tucker Carlson in this situation, the strategery, his FOIA request that Ken found out about goes back to 2019, a time when Trump was in the White House.
Yeah.
So these same policies that affect him now are actually, they happened under Trump, they happened under Obama, they happened as old as the NSA is, this stuff has been happening.
Wait.
Yeah.
So when Tucker says, why are you FOIAing my FOIA? What are you going to find? Nothing. Wait, he found something. It's almost as if that's why he's bothered by it, because of the weird thing about him going back to 2019. So it was a good thing that Ken Klippenstein FOIA'd his FOIA.
Well, Ryan Grimm comes on and he basically says, yeah, it's like the first thing that grizzled reporters tell you is like, you know what you should do is FOIA other journalists' FOIA requests. You should just do that because then you find out. And Ken said he didn't just do it to see whether Tucker FOIA'd him. He's like, yeah, probably happened. He said he FOIA'd it to find out if there's any clues about what exactly is going on with Tucker, because Tucker has been so vague and weird about all of this since it started. He's like, I'm being spied on by Joe Biden. What we found out later is that these things seem to have been intercepted by the NSA. Not a great thing that the NSA does this.
Sure.
And the best part is Tucker reveals he does no homework whatsoever as a journalist, that he didn't look at what else Ken Klippenstein has reported on. Because it's all that stuff that he's talking about the surveillance state.
No, he doesn't know and he doesn't care. He doesn't know about Ken. He doesn't know about The Intercept. And but let's briefly mention that, because Ken FOIA'd the FOIA. A reporter at BuzzFeed did as well. But you'll note that in Tucker's thing, he only talks about Ken. So why is that? And this was talked about in Ken's appearance on Deep Dive last night. There was a point where Tucker used to love to go on and attack BuzzFeed. That's a thing that Fox did at one point. But now that's not fun. That's not exciting enough. He wants to attack Ken and through Ken, the Intercept. Why? Why did he have all those shots about the Intercept, which has been incredibly critical of state surveillance? It's just Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald's been on his show a lot, and so he's paying him back by attacking a company that Glenn now hates. That's it. There's no more substance to it than that. It has nothing to do with him having a problem with a billionaire backer of The Intercept. Yes, Tucker Carlson for Fox News doesn't like when wealthy people fund media outlets. But that's probably what it is.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Even Tucker's limited, strategic, well-worded criticism doesn't make sense. It falls apart on its face because he's saying some shady billionaire funded site. It was launched with the money from a billionaire given to Glenn Stinkin' Greenwald.
Well, and I don't think Tucker's gonna bring that up the next time. But again,
so the he's on a billionaire-funded network, Fox News, that went $450 million in the red before anybody made any money off that, and that money came from Rupert Murdoch.
And he has no problem with that whatsoever. No, this is all just such. What can Foy the Foy? Okay, so if you think that was a waste of time, then it's perhaps a waste of time. It wasn't. We actually found out something about what you were doing, which is what really grieves you. But then why would you be talking about it? It's just such garbage. And by the way, I haven't talked too much about this story on the show because we live in this really weird climate, and Ken is experiencing this right now, where if there's a conflict between someone like Tucker Carlson, who's a white supremacist fascist tool, and the NSA, you just have to pretend that everything Tucker is saying is true, because if you don't, then you like the NSA, even if that's not consistent with anything that you've said before, as with Ken, it is not. He's incredibly critical of them. So you're just supposed to assume that it's all true, even though every detail we've gotten from this makes it seem as if Tucker's thing is largely BS. The only thing that isn't BS is that, yes, some of his stuff might have been intercepted by the NSA, which might be doing things that in general we don't agree with at all, but not the specific things that he's claiming they are. He's communicating with people who live in other countries to set up an interview with a government figure of a different country, and that was intercepted. And his takeaway is not that it's possible that they weren't spying on the foreigner, they were spying on him. It's that that's the only conclusion. He said that in his show. That's the only possible explanation when you're trying to set up an interview with a foreign leader. And he said the reason they're doing this is to intercept that and then reveal it to embarrass him. So they were gonna reveal that he was trying to get an interview with Putin to embarrass him, when presumably we would have found out about it anyway had he conducted the interview. None of this makes any sense. If you not even scratch the surface, you blow on the surface a little bit, it doesn't make any sense. But something, the NSA, Tucker Carlson, he seems really important here. But how, really, really brief, one more point, how important? He is saying that the NSA is spying on him, a journalist, individually. How serious should we take this? Maybe about as seriously as Fox is. Because Fox hasn't talked about it at all. Like, think about if Brett was getting spied on by the NRO or something. TYT would be talking about it because that's super significant. Fox is acting as if there's nothing to this and they don't want to get wrapped up in it. So I'm going to take some of my cues from them. And none of any of this can be interpreted as supporting the NSA. I'm perfectly fine with them shutting the NSA down. I have no interest in them whatsoever. But the NSA being bad doesn't make Tucker Carlson good or honest.
I've been spied on by the WWE for ages and nobody here has stepped up to me.
That is true. That is
true. I'm caught between a rock.
Suplexing you.
And Iraq.
In a Cena place, anyway. Yeah. There's one other aspect of this I want to briefly talk about. So Ken Klippenstein being taken down by Tucker Carlson, and it's good because he deserves it. He can't keep getting away with it, this Ken Klippenstein. But there was a really funny thing about it that sort of, you can get a little bit of it from Ken's tweet. So Ken understandably tweeted, literally all I did was file a FOIA request, LOL, which is true. But if you go to that, you'll see a shot from the show, if we can bring up that tweet. And it's a shot of him, he's brought on this like law professor or whatever. And that's they took that picture of Ken. But why? If we jump ahead to Emily Sloan's tweet, they literally chose the pic of Ken, which would make it just visually read like he's owning Tucker. And you can zoom in. What, like, why is this the picture that they chose? First of all, that's not his Twitter profile pic. And I know that because when they showed Ken's pic, they showed his actual profile pic. Do you know what picture that is? I tracked it down. That is a screen grab from the thumbnail for an appearance that Ken made on The Conversation. Why is that? He has professional headshots. You Google Ken Klippenstein, there's photos all over the place. They picked that because they thought it made him look bad. It only makes it look as if he's laughing at how ridiculous they are.
You have to watch, and you have to watch the VOD from the.
I did.
From the appearance. Yeah. Everybody, I'm just saying, so everybody watching needs to watch the VOD from his deep dive appearance on Twitch. It is absolutely fantastic because it covers all a bunch of other stuff too. Like the fact that it takes 10 minutes to file a FOIA request. And the other things that are being overlooked by Tucker here is that it's not just Tucker that gets completely used and hosed by Ken Klippenstein. It's everybody who appears on Tucker's shows. All the people that like and retweet all the troll text from Ken when he says like, can you like issue some support for my uncle? He got sick. He's a World War II veteran, and it's Lee Harvey Oswald. Like that's it. It reveals just how poorly they do their job over there. It's so very frustrating, but at the same time hilarious.
Yeah. And with Tucker, I don't know if it's a combination of him being stupid or if he's just lying. So he doesn't get how surveillance works. He doesn't get what unmasking is. With his FBI theory, which by the way, he's just dispensed with. So just again, lying. How seriously should we take the NSA thing? Well, remember when he was saying the FBI was behind January 6th, and now he doesn't talk about it anymore. He revealed he didn't understand how unindicted co-conspirators work. Is there anything that Tucker actually understands about the world? I have one thing that I think he understands, and that's projection. And that's gonna be demonstrated, and we have just a little bit more from that appearance yesterday. So here's Tucker Carlson's show.
How about prison time? I mean, they tried to send, speaking of run amok intel agencies, they tried to send Roger Stone away for the rest of his life for inconsistent testimony. But none of these people, you know, they thrive. They get MSNBC contracts. This is not sustainable. Someone needs to fix this.
Okay. So first of all, Roger Stone lying in court under oath is inconsistent testimony, and I'll make a voice about it. And then it's okay that he's been pardoned, even though he lied to cover up his crimes, whatever. But the projection there was, so Ken Klippenstein, who loves the surveillance state somehow, and he did a lot of research to come to that conclusion, is doing this to get an MSNBC contract. So they secretly support government surveillance so that they can get cushy, well-paid cable news contracts. And that attack against Ken and others was made by Tucker Carlson, a guy who has a cushy multi-million-dollar cable news contract, and who has spent the last week calling for teachers to be surveilled by the state so that the state can fire them from their jobs if they say things politically that right-wing pundits don't agree with. So again, Ken Klippenstein loves the boot of the NSA on his neck, but Tucker Carlson, a guy who wants every classroom to be surveilled by the government, he's the true guy who is questioning government surveillance. None of this makes any sense.
And the mention of MSNBC gives up the entire game because that is the fire that fuels Tucker Carlson. He is so terribly dangerous. And my takeaway on all of it is not that he's stupid, it's that he's intentionally lying. And by lying, he's performing. And that is enshrined in legal history as his defense. It's a performance. It is lying to his audience in a way that is different from the truth. That's his legal argument. So that's not my analysis now, that is Tucker's analysis. And the MSNBC thing, he's the most dangerous type of person because this is a kid born into privilege. His dad was like a local news guy, and his mom is a Swanson broth heir or whatever. This guy has so much given to him, handed to him, and he is a darling. He's great at dinner parties. He's everything that you could hope for. So he's played the inside elitist at every turn game all the time to get where he is. That bow tie wearing, floppy haired, pleated pant, elitist Cape Cod perk. He gets to those heights and then he loses it, right?
Yeah.
He loses it at the hands of Jon Stewart. And now he will do anything in his power, lie, cheat, steal, sue, fabricate in order to keep this position until the end of time.
Yeah.
That's what makes Tucker so dangerous.
Yeah. Final point though, If you support these FOIAs of this out of control rogue journalist and NSA lover Ken Klippenstein, he does have a Patreon to fund the FOIAs and the legal work and all of that. Also, I just want to give some preemptive support to Ken, because I'm sure he got a lot of attacks and harassment and death threats last night. Well, there's at least a 40% chance that Glenn Greenwald is going to go on Tucker Carlson tonight to attack Ken Klippenstein and send his rabid, insane followers after him. So that's going to be fun, Ken. Don't envy you for tonight, but thank you for your work, though, buddy, and taking one for the team. Anyway, with that, we do have to take a break, but we've got a lot more news coming up after this. Okay, well, that last segment was a lot of fun, and now we move to really dark stuff once again. A few years ago, while regrettably Donald Trump was still president, Mohammed bin Salman, leader of Saudi Arabia, had a US journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, murdered in Turkey. And the US, very promptly after that, helped them to cover up the crime, avoid any sort of consequences whatsoever, and our alliance with Saudi Arabia rolled on as if they hadn't brutally tortured and murdered a journalist. But now it's being revealed a little bit more of what was going on about Donald Trump and his reaction to that event as it was proceeding and unfolding day by day, as we were finding out more about it. And it gets really dark. So one piece of intelligence in particular had apparently gotten Trump's attention. US officials had concluded that the Saudis had used a bone saw to carve up Jamal Khashoggi's body. And Donald Trump apparently got fixated on that, saying, I mean, he would go back to it. This is the source for this report, saying, trying to press them and telling them, you know, this will change everything, you guys. We've got to know, we're with you. We're standing behind Saudi Arabia, but we've got to get to the bottom of this. Was there a bone saw? Was there a bone saw? So first, let's reassure them we're with them no matter what. But then let's also find out if they cut apart the journalists they murdered with a bone saw. And Trump not only was weirdly fixated on this, but not affected by it in terms of his evaluation of Saudi Arabia, he thought that it was kind of funny, saying things like, I've been in difficult negotiations, I've never had to take a bone saw. This is in the immediate aftermath of the murder of that journalist, and he thought it was funny. He goes on to turn to Mike Pompeo, saying, have you ever had to take a bone saw into negotiations? To which Pompeo said, no, Mr. President, ha ha.
So cool. Such a cool guy.
Look, coming out of this, and we'll have more on this, the fact that he didn't care that they did it and that he wanted to maintain the exact same relationship with Mohammed bin Salman and Saudi Arabia is obviously 99.999% of the issue with all of this. But the fact that along the way he thought it was funny and would joke to a group of government officials, the Secretary of State, people who were literally involved in the work of trying to find out exactly what happened in this murder of a journalist. I just, like, the Christians love this guy. They think that he is the best. Jesus chose him to come back and be our president. I don't know. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, it's the hypocrisy is just a symptom of tribalism. People have chosen this guy, they like him. They like that he thinks and acts like this. But if anyone ever, God forbid, on the other side of the aisle from them were to ever say something, like fixate on something they didn't think was the exact right thing to fixate on, or didn't fixate on something enough, oh, forever, forever, you would never hear the end of it.
Yeah.
This guy is asking if there's a bone saw, and not just that, not to say like, listen, if they came with a bone saw, maybe it's more premeditated than we thought. Coming with that, that's evidence a specific kind of saw is either used for torture or for the purposes of cutting up a body so you can hide it and take it out. No, it wasn't that. It was like, that's nifty. That'd be an intimidating thing to use in the art of the deal.
Isn't this a fun world we're in now? Ha ha. I negotiate, they negotiate with bone saws. Isn't that fun? Right.
It's like that's anyway, what you got from all this? That's what you took away from all this?
That is what he took away from all of this. And that's just disgusting. But obviously, as I alluded to earlier, the issue was the knee-jerk need to protect them from any consequences. And so really fast, as the days were going on, the Saudis kept changing their explanation of what happened. So 3 days after the murder, they said that Khashoggi had left the consulate and the Saudis had no idea what happened to him. It turned out that was a body double that they had put there to make it seem as if he'd escaped. Then as details started to come out, there were the audio tapes of what had happened inside the consulate. They declared that he had died in a fist fight because they wanted us to believe that Jamal Khashoggi had gone into the consulate and then tried to kill everyone with his bare hands. And so they accidentally killed him and cut his body apart. And then finally they came out and said, well, it was rogue killers in the consulate that had done it. That was obviously insane. It was particularly insane coming after all of the other made up explanations. But that didn't stop Donald Trump, who on October 15th said, I just spoke with the king of Saudi Arabia, who denies any knowledge of what took place with regard to, as he said, his Saudi Arabian citizen. It sounded to me like maybe these could have been rogue killers. Who knows? Well, you know, because he knew at that point what had happened. But the Saudis had their public relations trick they wanted to use about the rogue killers. And he thought, oh, I'll just say that. It sounded to me, because they told me to say this. And what was all of this about? Well, all of this was about was nothing having to do with human rights, the life of this journalist, the need for the surviving family members of Jamal Khashoggi to understand what was going on and get something like justice. He cared about the money because he said about this, if we abandon Saudi Arabia, it will be a terrible mistake. They're buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of things from this country. If I say we don't want to take your business, if I say we're going to cut it off, they will get the equipment, military equipment and other things from Russia and China. And I'm not going to tell a country that's spending hundreds of billions of dollars and has helped me out to do one thing very importantly, keep oil prices down. So they're not going to $100 and $150 a barrel. And I'm not going to destroy the economy for our country by being foolish with Saudi Arabia. It's about America first. So that was why he was totally fine with them murdering this journalist, cutting up his body. They buy stuff from us. So you get one journalist free, one murder and torture free.
And I'm not going to tell you how many others you get for free and how much other misbehaving you can do. But I would just say my criticism of Trump from a Trumpist perspective is that is a weak appraisal of this, of your position in terms of power. You saying that you cannot keep Saudi Arabia in check by various means and rather are letting them do literally whatever they want, even if it's killing like someone who is a permanent, is an American resident, if not citizen. Then you're saying you're weaker than Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Now, the other thing to take away from this is the quiet part loud. This is the calculus that happens behind the scenes with every unfortunate story that gets out of hand from the perspective of damage control and keeping your perceived, you know, nobility in intact. Like they're angry when stories come out like this, not because they care about what happened and that it's a tragedy that befell someone that was just trying to do something that is protected by the First Amendment in America anyways. Instead, you're mad because you know you've already done the calculus and now you have to deal with it. And this is gonna be bad optics and you have to do the political calculus and make, you know, if you're Trump, you just make louder noise about other things as soon as possible and get people to start paying attention to something else. But that calculus happens all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, it does. And one last little awful wrinkle, it doesn't just happen under Trump because obviously, you know, he tried to protect MBS from people finding out about this. He kept denying it always, defending him. So once Biden was inaugurated, they came out with this report making it even more clear what had actually happened. So that's good. But then Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, said, I would say the relationship with Saudi Arabia is an important one. We have significant ongoing interests. We remain committed to the defense of the kingdom. So what we've done by the actions we've taken is not to rupture the relationship, but to recalibrate it to be more in line with our interests and our values. This is bigger than any one person. And I don't know if there he's referring to MBS or to Jamal Khashoggi or to Biden himself or to himself as Secretary of State. But what I know he's not saying is that they're going to take these gross, tragic human rights violations any more seriously than they were taken under Donald Trump.
And these are the head of state type things, not head of government. It's just like, and I'll explain that. Basically, like the cool thing about elections and American regimes is you get a new fresh face every 8 years at least, and in this case, four. But all the apparatus that they are in charge of, but the entire apparatus that they're in charge of, those folks, they remain behind the scenes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Okay, well, we only have a few minutes left in this block. We're gonna try to give him a little bit of time to get his video going again as we launch into this next story. Last week, we let you know about the Canadian death toll from the heat dome that had overlaid the Pacific Northwest and parts of Canada. It was absolutely devastating, leading to wildfires and the loss of hundreds and hundreds of lives. Now we have a little bit more information about how devastating it was here in the US. The death toll as of right now in the Pacific Northwest has risen to nearly 200 people who died as a result of those horrendous hot conditions. There was 116 deaths reported in Oregon, 78 deaths in Washington state. And look, even as it was happening, we talked about the fact that heat waves always result in people dying because we don't protect them. We don't care if they've access to AC. We leave older people in places where they might die. But I want to put it in perspective though, because while heat waves are always devastating, this one was worse. Between 2015 and 2020, Washington saw just 39 deaths in the late spring and summer months. So over a period of 5 years, 39 deaths. In this one heat wave, for a week, they had 78 deaths. So absolutely devastating and far and away worse than anything we had experienced earlier. And again, to remind you, as we talked about last week, in British Columbia, as many as 500 people died from this one particular heat wave, as well as the loss of potentially more lives, animal life and property from the wildfires burning that obviously a heat wave like that would contribute to. So Brett, we speculated that this would result in a lot of deaths, and indeed it has.
Yes, it is. I don't know, you know how I feel about all these stories. It's like, yeah, we all know what the problem is. That's the frustrating thing. And the messaging around it is just messaging. Like, we know what the issue is, we know what the problem is, and we don't do anything to change it for a bunch of reasons. One, and we can probably qualify, you know, quantify exactly what percentage of the problem it is. One is our own habits. The other is refusal of energy companies who are entrenched in not only the physical infrastructure already of the country, but also entrenched in their relationships to seats of power and decision making in America as it relates to our representatives. It just keeps going and going. It's that inertia that will, you know, not so hilariously cause the heat death of the planet.
Yeah, and look, we're focusing on that particular heat dome because that was particularly devastating for a particular area over a particular period of time. But there was, you know, record temperatures in Arizona, in Nevada. You know, we talked about in the Arctic, in Russia, there was really high temperatures. In Canada, that city or that small town of Lytton, we had like checked in each day as they were breaking records, and almost like tragically, like perfectly in terms of the message being sent to the world, then burned down in a wildfire, like set land temperature records day after day after day, and then was burned to the ground. And it got a little bit of coverage, and more coverage than usual mentioned climate change. I think it was at one point like 26% of the segments about the heat dome mentioned climate change. But still, now we're moving on. And how many people are talking about that heat wave or the next one that's gonna come, or the fact that we're launching into months of devastating wildfires? Those things are not simply going to get better if we ignore them. They are going to almost certainly get worse every year from now on. Okay, we have a little bit more climate news to get to after our break, but this is all the time we have for our first hour. So thank you to all of you on our various linear platforms for watching the show. Much appreciated. But if you're watching on the app, or if you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube, we've got a lot more news for you, including the ceremonial throwing away of political garbage. I've got one. We're gonna see who the community has voted for. And Brett, maybe a little bit out of garbage thrown away practice. We're gonna see who he's plucked.
How dare you? How?
Oh, you're not frozen, John. Anymore. That's good. That's good.
I have 11 seconds worth of things to say about that.
No, no, we gotta go. We gotta go.
Oh, so anyway, we're
very excited for that, as well as other news. So we're gonna take just a couple minutes off and we'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.